Hello, and welcome to Get Her in the Game, a pitch podcast. I am Dee Dee, and I go by Dust Daughter on Twitter.
And I'm Olivia at Sportifica.
Yay, and we are back after a brief break.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad we're spacing it out because it's going to be sad to finish this. So I'm glad we're taking our time.
And it just so happens that this episode is timely. And also just the whole show gives us an excuse to talk about our favorite thing, sports media.
We love to hate
Yes, we do.
it. It
We will
is the
continue to do
crux of late night hate night.
it is. It is the
So.
bane of our sports fan existence. Thank you, show, for portraying it so accurately. Just to remind you, you can email the show at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. You can also hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/blackgirlsquee, and drop a few coins if you like what we're doing and want more of it. And without further ado, we will begin our recap of episode 5 for Pitch, which is called Alfonso Guzman Chavez. The episode was written by Becky Hartman Edwards, who, funnily enough, began her writing career in the 90s on Fox's In Living Color. And you'll see why that's so funny later on in the episode. And it was directed by Paris Barclay, who has pretty much directed an episode of everything. Like the list of his television directing credits are as long as Yao Ming's arm. So
That's
just
long.
as long. Might be long as his leg, so it's really long. He's done a lot of TV. So the episode begins with this card that says 48 hours before the MLB trade line, and we'll see a lot of these cards come up with different times on them throughout the episode. We hear a female sportscaster narrate as men in suits and ties open up laptops and make phone calls. She says that GMs and front offices are sweating just as much as players on the field as they scramble to find the missing pieces they need to make a playoff push. And this is where you have to, switch your brain and remember that by pieces, they actually mean players, which means people.
Right. She even goes on to say human beings whose lives are turned upside down.
Yeah, but that's much, much later in her whole
Yeah, her whole spiel.
intro, because the language of sports media, and especially as it revolves around trades, is it's dehumanizing. It's not even just kind of dehumanizing. It's totally dehumanizing. They do as much as physically possible to avoid using the words people and or human beings when they refer to pieces, trade prospects, draft assets, etc., etc. So the owners are also having a fire sale. Remember, the fire sale involves people. This language is just really, it really freaks me out. Owners are having a fire sale, hoping to restock their pipelines with prospects. So just want to say kudos to the writing staff, because the way that they portray the media and the nuance of how they kind of do all they can to avoid actually talking about people, right, when talking about trading people is great. It's annoying, but it's great. The sportscaster says they all dream of being Jonah Hill from Moneyball, not the one from Wolf of Wall Street. But Moneyball with the algorithms and the donuts. And then we finally see a face we recognize, and it's Oscar. He's sitting down at the head of a table full of suits with a cup of coffee. The sportscaster finally gets to the players. You know, the human beings whose lives are turned upside down when they're shipped from one city to another, as they try to focus on the one thing that they can control, playing baseball.
And even then, they can only control so much of that.
Pretty much.
And you know, it's interesting, as we hear later on in the episode, that this is what the players sign up for, and the reward is that they earn a lot of money and have the possibility of winning championships. But, you know, the GMs and the owners, they also get to make lots of money.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, well, what are they doing to, what is their sacrifice, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes the GMs screw the players out of money they're owed. You know, they always encourage players to take that hometown discount, or they'll trade a player before, you know, their next big contract is due, after they've played their heart out for over 2 years. Played through the loss of family members. Yeah, I'm going there.
Yeah.
I'm going there early.
Go there.
Yeah, Danny Ainge is not trying to pay people.
No. Yeah, we'll have a real life example for listeners.
Yes.
If you're interested.
Yes. I mean, we have a lot of examples if you want to talk about Mr. Ainge.
Oh, goodness.
He screwed a lot of people.
Daniel.
Don't give me a start.
He has inspired a group chat.
Like.
He is the sole topic of a group chat, okay?
Somewhere. We know it. They might not have told anybody in the media, but we know it exists.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so yeah, they don't sign up for all of the things that GMs like Daniel Ainge have in store for them, but right.
And just because they are making millions of dollars that they have the chance to, you know, build legacies and win championships, that doesn't mean that they can't stand up for themselves and, you know, ask for better treatment. That doesn't mean that they can't be unhappy with their situation in the league. You know, it's just, it is inhumane to expect that of them and not expect the same and criticize, you know, GMs and owners in the same way.
Yeah. Because, yeah, what Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder and a lot of those guys that have been, and Avery Bradley, a lot of those guys that have been shipped out of Boston have created there the past 2.5 years. They took a rebuilding team and made them an Eastern Conference finalist.
Right.
They did that.
Yeah.
And you can say everything you want about Wizard Brad Stevens, but he's not on the floor. And he's not playing through half of the stuff that Isaiah was playing through. So basically, Daniel Ainge can kiss my whole entire ass. And we should probably get back to the recap.
All right. Well, at least, he doesn't even deserve to do that. So,
He doesn't deserve the privilege.
don't want him anywhere near me. So,
No! Probably trying to train me too.
that's, yeah, like under the table. He's on his phone working some sort of deal. Goodness. But,
Maybe I traded you.
Whew. Oh no, first he tried to butter you up and it's like, how you doing? How was your vacation?
Yeah, I traded you.
Save it.
Yeah,
Save it. But gosh, it's like we're talking in code right now, but
know.
okay, back to pitch. At least we have we got a cute OT3 dynamic to start with them. The Padres game is playing on the TV screen in the control room where Oscar and all of his suits are working, and Oscar's on the phone with a worried look on his face, but he's also kind of watching the game. And there we see that Mike Lawson slides into home plate. The whole team congratulates him, but as we have seen with Mike, that probably hurt a little bit. And back in the clubhouse, Mike tells Blit that he's getting too old for inside the park home runs. And Blit tells Mike not to get carried away. That was a double, two errors. Thank you very much. And then we see another teammate, Butch, who apologizes to Jenny for costing her a W, but Jenny doesn't care as long as the team gets a win. And runs are charged to Butch and not her. So Tommy overhears and approves. Looks like they are fast friends after a rough start. And Jenny says that he taught her well. Jenny notices the packed duffel bag that Butch has at his locker and asks about it. And Butch says he hasn't heard anything yet, but he knows that he has to be ready during trade season. He knows from experience because he ended up in Kansas City with nothing but floss and a pair of boxers. And boy, does Butch go on a journey this
Oh
episode.
my gosh. Oh my
Just
gosh. Who
kind of
was
this
that guy?
background journey.
He was
Which
like
guy?
the Luke, he was like the Luke Ridenour of the MLB. I think it was either him or Kirk Heinrich that got traded to like three or four different teams during one trade deadline.
Kirk is definitely a journeyman, that's for sure. Could have
Yeah.
been him.
But they just said they got so tired of being moved around that all that time that they just retired.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's cold-blooded stuff. Cold-blooded stuff.
There you have it.
Blip is checking for updates on his phone. He says players can disappear like the rapture. But Mike tells Jenny to relax because he sees her visibly freaking out. He says that she's not going anywhere since she's the biggest story in baseball. Blip says that's easy for Mike to say since he has a no trade clause.
The KG
Join me
special.
and Olivia. Exactly. Join me and Olivia as we laugh at that. But Mike doesn't think Blip's going anywhere either. Blip disagrees after seeing his name on a long list of players who the Cubs might be targeting. And just to note that Pitch aired the year that the Cubs made history and won the World Series after decades, like
Yeah.
almost a century, I want to say,
It may have
but I
been
could be
more.
wrong.
It may have been
Yeah.
a century.
Yeah. So, So anything regarding the Cubs, mentioning the Cubs this year is in this series is a nice little thing to reminder that Cubs won the series. Mike dismisses that as nothing, tells Ginny again that she's not going anywhere because she's still anxious. But Ginny's worried about the rest of the team. She sees them all checking their phones at their lockers. Mike tells them to put the phones down and he gives a mini speech.
I love that he did this just because Ginny was worried. Like, he took a look at her and she took a look at him. She's like, you got to do your pep talk thing. He's like, all right, whatever you want. So he tries to dig one out.
The Lawson special. He says they'd hear about a trade from the GM, not Twitter. Uh-huh. And again, exactly. Join us while we laugh. And that the Padres have won 6 games in a row and the Giants and Dodgers hit their footsteps. So like it or not, he's probably going to see all of their ugly mugs tomorrow. So that seemed to diffuse the situation and there's laughter in the clubhouse until Oscar walks in. Da, da, da.
And the mood immediately changes.
It does. Mike takes back his whole speech and says, yeah, one of you is a goner.
Tragic Mike.
What are you doing? Tragic Mike, indeed.
Oh, goodness. Okay. So Oscar has a beer with Al in his office to congratulate Al on another win. And Al says the guys are giving him a heart attack, but they're getting it done. Kind of reminds me of Doc Rivers in the Celtics chase.
Doc Rivers trying to motivate Jeff Green.
Oof.
Bless his heart.
Rough memories. Oscar asks him if this squad is for real. You know, if this team as is can do it all. And Al thinks that they are, but they may need a few more pieces. So Oscar rattles off the shopping list while swallowing some pills, which are aspirin for his toothache, which is funny because the last episode, Rhonda was desperately trying to think of an excuse as to why Oscar was missing. So she said that he had an abscess tooth. So,
like all the things to pull out of thin air.
It seems more like because he's so stressed, you know, it's related to the more stressed he gets, the worse the toothache gets. But what they need is a setup guy, a utility infielder, and a corner man who can hit. So Oscar wants reassurance that if he gets these players, then the Padres will be, you know, contenders. They'll be in the playoffs. But instead of answering, Al compliments Oscar's unusually long eyelashes.
Okay.
Which he gets from his mother. Al then tells Oscar that those players make the Padres contenders. I think he's just trying to get Oscar to relax a bit.
Yeah.
Al asks about the new vice president of baseball operations. Goodbye, Frank. I'm not sure we need Kevin Connolly, but goodbye.
Yeah. Bye. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
So Oscar doesn't think that this guy even knows his name. But then we cut to Oscar walking into his office and the new guy is way younger than Frank. And he's yelling Oscar over and over again. So he does know who Oscar is and he hugs him instead of shaking his hand. He talks about, yeah, I think it's, you know, you can see it's all kind of an act, like. He does all this sweet stuff, the pep talk, but then he's like, oh, by the way, you need to do this impossible thing. You know, doesn't give him a second. So he talks about how much he loves San Diego, but finally gets to the point. They have 44 hours until the trade deadline, and Oscar wants to make moves. He thinks that the Padres should be buyers and wants to know if the owners will support them. And the new guy says that Maxine has given him carte blanche to do what he thinks is best for the team. says that Oscar can't give up any top prospects during his shopping spree, and that means LeVon, who he calls Levine, and the kid from Tennessee. He also wants Oscar to cut at least $2 million from the payroll. So this is, Oscar's the only GM I've ever sympathized with.
Yeah. Don't really know that life.
Right. Oscar laughs nervously and says that those two mandates are at cross purposes. The new guy knows this, but he doesn't care. He gives him some speech about people who limit themselves by saying the sky's the limit, and also lets him know that he's done some research on Oscar. We learn that Oscar is one of only three Latinx GMs in the MLB. Oscar just rubs the side of his face where his sore tooth is. You know, I don't like this new guy coming in here and laying all these impossible demands on Oscar, and he doesn't even know the players' names.
No, and you'll see, like, throughout the episode, he continually mispronounces people's names. He's this young, fresh face from Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Who may follow baseball in his free time, but doesn't know the ins and outs of it the way Oscar does, the way Al does, the way, you know, the players do. And if he had respect for the players, he would try to get their names right.
Right.
But they're just pieces moving through revolving doors for him.
And he just sets up this impossible thing where if Oscar can't meet those demands, it's all his fault. And if he does, it's like he can just gloss over the fact that this guy, you know, put Oscar in this really difficult position. You know, by the end of the episodes, he's like, I knew you could do it all along. But that doesn't change the fact that he, you know, he really wasn't being fair with Oscar.
Or reasonable, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, he's a jerk. And I'm glad that I never hear anybody say his name, so I think that's funny because Oscar thought that the new guy wouldn't know his name, but nobody seems to know the new guy's name, and I like that. At the Sanders home, Jenny is playing video games with the boys and basically beating their butts because she's Jenny and super competitive. While Blip and Evelyn talk in the kitchen, she is making risotto for dinner, and Blip loves it.
It looks good.
And I was hungry. They also look super cute together. Jenny beats the kids at the video game, and Blip has to remind her that they are only seven.
Seven and a half.
Which, seven and a half. That means nothing, Jenny. There's still seven to Blip. Blip tells Jenny that it's her turn to set the table.
I love that line. I love what it implies, you know, that she's part of the family.
Yeah, and that she's done this before, and, you know, and that she's there regularly.
Right.
For it to be her turn to set the table.
Yeah.
So that's sweet. Mm-hmm. They're like her, you know, they're like her family. Away from home. And it gives her a chance to get out of that hotel room that she's still in.
Goodness. And those stock photos are like killing me in her hotel room.
Evelyn gets a notification on her tablet that the house in San Alejo with the basketball court just came on the market. It has huge walk-in closets. It has a great kitchen. And it's only three blocks away from the twins' school. Plus, the price dropped $50,000, and Evelyn is giving Blip the eyes like, come on, let's do it, let's get this house. But Blip says he can't think about buying a new house 2 days away from the trade deadline, which is a fair point, I think. Evelyn asks if this is about the 538 story, and Blip freaks out because he didn't even know about that story. And I'm like, oh, Evelyn!
Oh, no.
Evelyn reminds him that he's an all-star on a team-friendly contract. Oh, I know some all-stars on team-friendly contracts that got traded, too. Yeah, when they got a little too old, or they had one injury too many. Anyway. Shake my fist at Danny again. Okay. Ginny echoes Mike by telling Blip he's not going anywhere. But Blip is worried because he doesn't have a no trade clause. Means nothing, sweetie. No trade clause means nothing anymore. Blip, you sweet summer child. You just don't know.
Bless your heart.
So Ginny starts freaking out too. Ginny says that they can't move. They're the only real friend she has. So Ginny's taking Blip's possible impending trade very, 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 very personally.
Right. We learn why with our first flashback to Tarboro in 2010. Ginny rides up to someone's house on her bike, and she sees a moving truck out front with a young guy walking out of the house who sees her but walks away without saying anything, and he gets in the truck and rides away. And we get a flashback within a flashback to 3 months earlier, and we see that this guy is a second baseman on her AAA team. And his name is Jordan Collins, who he just moved to Charlotte, or from Charlotte, and she takes him through the warm-up drills. He has an arm. He cracks a few jokes with her. At first, she thinks he's flirting, but he really just wants to be friends, which is a refreshing thing to see. He references In Living Color, which Ginny's never seen. And because the show ended before she was born.
It came out in 90 and was over in 94. So.
Right. But it becomes something that they bond over because he's got the DVDs. So they become fast friends through that. Back to the present with tragic Mike back at Lawson's house. He's resting after his most recent sexcapade with Amelia, which I'm just so over. I think that they had like a fun chemistry when it was lighthearted and you thought it would only last for like an episode. But this episode, when they tried to make it seem like it was becoming more serious, I just didn't buy it. Anyways, Mike said he started slow, but he found his rhythm. No, thank you. I don't care. Amelia is already getting dressed. She says she can't sleep there because she left her night guard at her place. But Mike really wants her to stay. And so he thinks that she's making some random excuse to keep her from staying the night. But Amelia is like, that's not what we are. So she's starting to leave. But Mike walks her to her car, where he becomes even more tragic.
Even more tragic.
Boy, oh boy.
One of Amelia's side mirrors on her car is busted, and Mike has seen a behavior like this before. And then mumbles that he hates this groupie on groupie crime. Amelia takes offense to that, as she should, because to be a groupie, you would have to actually, follow someone's career. And I don't think she she ever followed Mike's career before she became Ginny's agent. So, Amelia takes offense, and she drives off in a huff. Back in the Padres control room with all the suits, Oscar says they just flipped Butch Hunter to the Cardinals. So it's kind of a good thing that he's already packed. In return, they get Omar Robles and a player to be named. So he takes Butch's name off the board as the suits cheer. Ugh. Al walks up to Butch in the clubhouse to let him know. But Butch seems to already know because he's already got tears welling up in his eyes. And, you know, he kind of nods and he's resigned to his fate.
Yeah.
Oscar says that's one down and two to go on his shopping list. Remember, his shopping list is for players who are people.
It's disturbing.
Never forget it. Yes. Shopping lists for people freaks me out. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, especially, you know, we know how even all the way up at the top, we know how they think. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
For people to be this disposable, it's kind of gross. So new guy, VP, walks in and congratulates Oscar on the Robles trade. He says the payroll is still high, but Oscar says he has time.
Back in Jenny's hotel room, she's checking her phone and watching sports news for trade updates. And one of my favorite scenes from the show starts. She calls Elliot and he's got a guitar strapped to his back. Nice little detail. And they talk about his fantasy baseball team for an inordinate amount of time. She's looking for more assurance that Blip won't get traded. And he says it's doubtful, but it depends on if the team could get a young guy on a lower salary for a position they need more help in, like third base. Elliot then gets an alert on his phone about a rumor that the Angels might trade a guy like that for a catcher that can hit. Mike?
I mean, that's where my brain went the minute he said that. But
right. And Elliot tells Jenny that as long as Alfonso Guzman Chavez stays an Oriole, Blip will remain a Padre.
We have episode title.
There you go. And you can tell that by the fact that his name is the episode title that he probably won't remain an Oriole. Jenny hangs up on Elliot as he's starting to defend himself for not having Jenny on his fantasy team.
his whip is really high.
So she flips channels until she finds a rerun of In Living Color, which launches us into another flashback. Jordan and Jenny are watching a men on film sketch from In Living Color, and they yell out the signature catchphrase, "Hated it." And it's so cute. And Jenny says, the show is so wrong, but Jordan says that's what makes it so funny. But then Bill comes in to break up the fun by telling Jordan that it's getting late. Jordan says his dad should be there any minute, but it's not really convincing, and Bill wants Jenny to go to bed soon, so he offers to take Jordan home.
In the truck, Jordan apologizes for the inconvenience, but Bill says he understands. Jordan's father is a busy man. Bill says he hopes Jordan's dad can come to see one of his games, but Jordan says he's not as big a baseball fan as you are. And they have this meaningful look that I'm not sure I know what it means, but they share this look. While Jenny's like in the middle of the truck, like just minding her own business. Yeah. At Jordan's house, his dad stumbles out of the door, drunk, and Jordan walks right past him into the house. Back in the present, Oscar is on the phone wanting to talk about Barnes. Rhonda catches up to him and tells him he's going to the dentist. Rhonda says that Oscar says that Rhonda jinxed him with the lie about the abscessed tooth from last episode. But she set up an appointment with Dr. Gerard. And Oscar wants to bring an analytics guy with him because he has to stay working. Torn between first name Ross and last name Ross, Oscar tells Rhonda, "You know the one I like," and walks away. And Rhonda does not, in fact, know the one he likes. And we'll have to guess. poor Rhonda. Oscar is always putting her on the spot like this, and this is why he has
trying her best.
Yes. Mike gives Amelia a car from one of his dealerships, and Amelia gives it back. She tells him not to apologize for calling her a groupie by treating her like one. Again, fair point. And it's scary how much I am agreeing with Amelia this episode. But I'm sure that will change. It's me and it's Amelia. I'm sure that it will change.
So after that, Oscar and one of the Rosses are on their way to the dentist. I'm not sure if we need Kevin Connolly in this episode. I'm not sure if we need Josh Peck in this episode, but whatever. This is first name Ross. So he's not last name Ross, and that's the one Oscar supposedly wanted. FNR went to Camarillo Junior College and got this job because his dad is friends with Maxine. Uh-oh. Oscar.
Yay, nepotism.
Oscar trades his first baseman, Han, for a DH named Gordon. And now they have a reliever, and they've trimmed $2 million from the payroll, like Kevin Connolly's character asked. But they don't have a third baseman, so Oscar calls Ross a killjoy for reminding him and rubs his sore tooth as the stress builds. Amelia has Elliot monitoring social media for any word about the leaked pictures of Jenny, so we get a brief mention of that. She also gives him the keys to Mike's loaner and asks him to return it to Mike's dealership. And Elliot's like, all right, no questions asked. But then she tries to be too smart for her own good and ends up revealing the nature of her and Mike's relationship.
See, I knew it would change.
But I have to say that was probably the most entertaining scene for me with Amelia, because Elliot was just so funny, like didn't even get a word in, but he's like,
he didn't say a word. He's just like, and she just keeps going on and on. And then at the end, she has the nerve to say, I really don't see why this is any of your business anyway. And I just wanted to scream.
You never asked.
I didn't ask.
He didn't even want to. He didn't want to know.
He didn't want to know.
Goodness. So then we are reminded that now we're down to 27 hours, 39 minutes before the trade deadline. Everyone in the clubhouse is on their phone again. Mike wishes Butch happy travels before Al introduces Omar Robles, who we will later see. He's the guy that thinks he's falling in love with Jenny. We'll see that in a later episode. We'll see how Mike feels about that. But he's cute. He's cute.
He is.
And tells him he'll be playing third base tonight, even though he doesn't have a third base glove.
He's never played third base.
Never played. Tommy takes Jenny for a run around the stadium just to take their minds off of the trade rumors. And they take a break, and Tommy talks about how much he's going to miss Butch, especially because their kids were best friends. And that reminds Jenny of her next flashback.
And that reminds me of Isaiah and Avery.
I know.
Damn it. God damn it, Danny. Flashback. Yes, pitch. Jordan and Jenny celebrate her winning an athletic scholarship to NC State by having a beer under the bleachers. She wishes he could come with her, but he says his dad doesn't have the money and he doesn't have her arm. He might not have her arm, but he has a pretty good arm. We saw that earlier in the episode. Back in the present, Tommy introduces Jenny to his wife and son. She cuts the intro short, however, when she gets an alert on her phone. There's a rumor that Cleveland has some interest in Blip. So before, when people introduce their children to Jenny, she's very warm and very gracious. But this time she was very abrupt. So, you know, she's stressed. Newcard says 21 hours, 4 minutes until the trade deadline. And the Padres have 8 wins in a row. Oscar asks for stats on Grayson, who is the White Sox third baseman. First name Ross says he's good with the glove, but his offensive wins above replacement, known as WAR, is negative 2. And that's based on last name Ross's number. Oscar moves on to Dom Cristiello. And first name Ross says he's a good corner man. But Oscar knows that the Angels won't make a deal with him as payback for stealing LeVon Duarte.
Mm.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people won't talk to Danny.
I mean, I thought about that for a long time. I was wondering the reason why he never made moves at the midseason trade deadline. Mm-hmm. Was because people didn't want to make moves with him, especially after he fleeced the Nets.
Right.
And that was my going theory, that nobody wanted to do deals with him. And now I'm wondering if free agents will ever want to come there anymore.
Well, how many of them are going to buy his whole, you can come here and build a legacy with the most storied franchise, blah, blah, blah.
Win a championship, like, no, he's going to trade them once they get a little older and start wanting max money.
Right. Anyways, Blip's at...
I like how we're having two podcasts here. We're basically having a Seize Up podcast within the Pitch podcast, but that's
exactly. Blip is at Mike's house because Evelyn threw him out for the night because he just keeps checking his phone. She doesn't need that. And I just want to say that red shirt he was wearing, wow. That's all I have to say.
Wow. That's willpower for Evelyn to throw him out.
Yep.
Wearing that shirt. That's willpower.
Mm-hmm. So, so Blip says he's trying to block out the noise, but anything is possible with this new guy in the front office who doesn't even know anybody's name, except for Oscar's. Mike ignores a phone call from one of his, what did Blip call him?
Paramours.
And then we have Blip's Sanders PI on the case. I like, it is amazing. He quickly just, he's like, you're not telling me, so it has to be someone close. It's not Ginny because you're not that stupid. It has to be close to Ginny too. Therefore, it's Amelia.
Oh my God.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And Mike's trying to change the subject the whole time. But you can't stop Blip Sanders PI once he gets there.
Not when he smells, not when he smells blood.
And now Mike's like, okay, you got to tell Jenny, not only because it's the right thing to do, but also because I can't keep a secret, and Evelyn especially can't keep a secret from Jenny. So
yes.
And God, if Evelyn found out that, you know, if nobody told Jenny and Evelyn found out that Blip knew.
Yeah, he would be
trouble.
He would be Mike's new roommate.
Yeah. Mike's got a giant house, though, so I think they'd be fine. But meanwhile, Ginny is at the Sanders house drinking wine and watching cooking shows with Evelyn. That's probably the best possible way to relax, you know, in a situation like that. Blip comes home just in time for the news that AGC, our, you know, leading man, has been traded from the Orioles to the Braves. And Ginny's freaking out and wants more assurance that Blip won't get traded. But Blip really doesn't want to think about it for many reasons. Some of them Ginny doesn't really pick up on right away. He finally raises his voice and tells her, you know, it's not just about what Ginny's worried about. It's the fact that his whole family, the twins and Evelyn, are going to be affected by this too. And he doesn't really have room to make her feel okay about it either. So it's a tough scene, but, you know, it's probably something that Ginny needed to hear in the moment. And so then the relaxation time is over.
Yeah. And Evelyn says, I think you should leave. And Ginny says, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that hurt, but it was very, it was then real.
Yeah, it was. So now we're down to 2 hours, 7 minutes before the trade deadline. And Jenny's freaking out in her room and checking the trade news. And she gets a knock on the door from Amelia. And Ginny tells her that she's worried about Blip being traded. And Amelia tells Ginny that if she tells the team not to trade him, they won't because of Ginny's, you know, star power right now. But this is Amelia using kind of Hollywood movie star logic in the sports world. So just based on what we've seen in the past, it's a bad idea.
Oh, my God. And this is where I completely flip back to, Amelia, no. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
This is really bad advice. Oh, my God.
So.
Is it? Oh, okay. Ginny meets with Oscar and demands that they not trade Blip. And Oscar is so stressed and in so much pain, and under so much pressure 2 hours before the deadline, that he explodes on Ginny. I have never seen Oscar get so mad at anyone on this show. The way that he yells at Ginny, it really made me dislike him for a bit of the series after this. Even though, yes, it's a bad idea. I know it's a bad idea. But that Ginny is, Ginny's not considering what Oscar's going through, and Oscar is certainly not considering what Ginny's going through.
Yeah, and you can tell Ginny is desperate. You know, she's not trying to do this to assert her dominance or anything. She's really just desperately, this is her last resort.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he kind of shouts her out of his office, and he's rubbing at that tooth again. But unfortunately, it gave Oscar an idea for what to do about his third baseman situation. I just wish that Oscar hadn't yelled at Ginny and had yelled at Amelia instead, because it was her bad idea. And I wonder why Amelia didn't come with Ginny.
Right, right. Good point.
As her agent.
Yeah.
I mean, if she should have been there. She should have gotten some of that blowback instead of Ginny taking all of it. So yeah, Amelia's back on my bad side. It's almost like she never left. Jordan and Ginny, I'm a mess, I'm petty. Jordan and Ginny are singing their pump-up song, which I think is Teenage Dream by Katy Perry. I don't know. Maybe it's not the right time frame. I'm not sure, but it sounded like it might have been. And we know that Jenny does like to sing Katy Perry songs off key, so maybe that's where she got it from. anyways, Bill cuts it off because he hates fun.
Yep.
He says, this is a game. Jordan said his dad swore he was finally coming to see him play, and he and Jenny get excited about that. Of course, Jordan's dad does not show up, and Bill has had enough. He calls Jordan's dad and leaves a message saying that it would mean the world if he came to see his son play. So, we get to see another side of Bill.
It was nice to see that.
Yeah, and I wish we had seen more of that. Bill may hate fun, but he has a heart. He cares about baseball and stuff related to baseball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, parents come in to see their kids play baseball. He doesn't have a totally one-track mind. Ray, who is Jordan's dad, pours himself another drink and passes out while the answering machine is recording this message. Later he comes to, he plays the message and heads out to the field. We see him run a red light and he ends up crashing into another vehicle that's oncoming. And we see that it is Bill Baker's truck.
And it's no wonder that Jenny feels so responsible for everything around her. You know, there's no way that she doesn't feel some sort of guilt attached to her father's death, to Jordan moving away. You know, and so you can see how that still affects her, of course. You know, it's completely unwarranted. She shouldn't feel guilty at all. It's not her fault, but you can definitely understand why she feels that way and why she's so worried that she'll lose the people she loves. And you realize how important the Sanders are to her, because aside from her brother, who they have a strained relationship right now because of Amelia, you know, that's her family. And that's really it.
And we can see why she has been just on alert, just constantly anxious this entire episode.
Right.
We don't know something about this whole trade deadline and possibility that she could lose this chosen this found family has triggered the hell out of her.
You're right.
And that's something that Oscar doesn't understand. Amelia doesn't understand. Hell, even Mike and Blip and Evelyn don't understand.
Right. Yeah, it goes beyond just, you guys can't leave because, you know, you're entertaining and you're my friends and I need friends. It goes so much further than that.
I'm still coping with the loss of my dad.
Right.
And, you know, the fallout from that, I still haven't fully dealt with it there's still no closure on our really difficult relationship. So there's a lot going on in Jenny's head. Bless her.
Yeah. It's really a lifelong process, and for it all to come to a head for Jenny in this very stressful time in her life, aside from this, you know, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
So, but it keeps on moving, and we're at 31 minutes, 26 seconds before the trade deadline. Oscar is talking to the Cubs about trading for Steve Hale, but they want more than Gordon, what he's offering. First name Ross runs to the board with all the players' names, looking for the right one. Then we're down to 9 minutes, 45 seconds before the trade deadline, and Ginny is in her locker room, and Blip comes there to apologize for yelling at her, which I was really glad to see. I mean, each time that they've kind of had a argument, Blip has apologized. And you see how that is different than I wish, like you say here in your notes, that Oscar apologized to Ginny too. You know, he was right to say, you know, you can't come in here and make those kinds of demands, but the delivery was really a bit much.
Yeah.
So, but but this scene here is really sweet, and I just love that they wait out the deadline together in the sanctuary of Jenny's little locker room. And but it keeps on ticking.
She gets
a false alarm. Evelyn playing words with friends. I love how, you know, they're stressed out. Maybe Evelyn is coping with the stress by playing words with friends. So 6 minutes, 3 seconds before the trade deadline, Oscar makes a deal by trading a lefty reliever that they just received in a previous trade, but he played one game with them, I think, and he did well. So he gets the team to throw in $300,000 as well, which puts them under the budget. He tells Rhonda to take a note that first name Ross is the Ross he likes. All right, I guess that nepotism works, huh?
Hey, it's working for the current White House administration, right?
And a whole slew of other things.
Ginny and Blip count down the last 10 seconds. They get no alerts and no trades. So Blip is staying. And just looking at their faces and seeing the joy and relief on Ginny and Blip's face, that was kind of beautiful. That was a nice little bit of acting there.
It was definitely one of my favorite moments of the show. And I love when Ginny kind of squeezes his chin right before they walk out of the room. It's so sweet. But in our experience, I was like, just because the deadline has passed doesn't mean there's not more news to come. Like, I was like, we aren't out of the woods yet, folks. But luckily they were in this case.
Well, kind of. I mean,
Oscar
kinda
wasn't.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blip was, Oscar wasn't. New guy VP comes into the control room to celebrate the end of the deadline, but now it's on to the waiver wire because, and I'm sure this is something that one Daniel Ainge has said, we're not done dealing.
He's never
new guys never he's making trades right now in his sleep or something. New guy VP wants Oscar to make room for LeVon at catcher by getting Mike to waive his no trade clause.
Oh boy. See? It means nothing.
Deja vu. Deja freaking vu. Oscar tells Rhonda he might need a root canal.
Yeah, I think so, Oscar.
if the pain is that deep and that persistent. Butch got traded 3 times in a day, so he ends up back in the Padres clubhouse. but Tommy's not there to celebrate because he just got shipped to the Cubs. And that's what happens when life comes at you fast.
He didn't even worry about Tommy. He was so consumed with Blip. Poor Ginny.
With Blip. Yeah. Ginny didn't even think about whether Tommy might or might not be on the trading block, but that's the thing. Anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody could be on the block.
So losing Tommy kind of triggers another flashback of Ginny's, you know, back on her bike and the moving van pulling away as Jordan takes one last look at Ginny and Ginny rides away with tears in her eyes. So she does it, losing people for her is really hard because, you know, it's these defining moments in her life, because when she lost her dad, she also lost
her friend.
Her friend. The only friend so far that we've seen her have from that time. And we just saw in those flashbacks of her at school that she really did feel like an outsider. So it, you know, wouldn't be surprising if that really was one of her first, you know, close friends. In the present day, Mike finds Amelia in a parking garage and he gives her a mouth guard, which is a much more intimate gift than the car rental. And so we're supposed to take this as kind of a serious, you know, gesture here. And Amelia says that hers is custom made. So she started carrying it with her, which is another serious gesture. And that's when they both realize that there's something they should do. And she agrees.
all the disdain in that sigh.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. I like that.
At the Sanders house, Ginny's watching In Living Color with the babies. And Blip steps in to remind Ginny that they're only 7 and way too young to be watching this show. So she she turns off the TV and says they're in it for a treat in 5 or 6 years. But when Blip leaves the room, another of the show's catchphrases, "Homie, don't play that." They turn the show back on as soon as Blip's out.
Oh my God, Ginny, stop doing Ginny. That. They're way too young. They really need to be, like, I would wait 10 years. Come on. Some of that stuff is, like, really adult.
Yeah. But the cute part of it is that Ginny looks at the twins who are curling towards her and cuddling with her on the couch. And she feels content. She has her found family. And it's a really sweet little moment.
Also, hi, Kylie's dimples. Hi.
Oh, there are just so many cute faces in that little moment.
Yes. The next day, Amelia catches up with Ginny, and she tells Ginny about her and Mike. Ginny says all the right things, you know, it's none of my business, and you're both grown, and all that stuff, and, you know, makes it look and sound like she's okay with everything. And Amelia walks off satisfied. Then Ginny heads to her locker room to get dressed for the game. But she ignores Mike's phone call on the way in.
And she looks, as soon as she turned around from Amelia, she has this kind of shattered look on her face.
Yeah, her face she drops the whole act.
Yeah.
And her face falls. So, yeah. She, in fact, is not okay with that.
No.
But she knows that she can't really say anything about it because it isn't really any of her business. Even though it's still kind of skeevy for Amelia to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the look on her face, she just feels kind of shocked and maybe a little betrayed in some way. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll see kind of the aftermath of, you know, you had a really good point. Maybe we kind of forget that these flashbacks, you know, they're not only for us to learn more about the story, but it is kind of happening in real time. You know, Ginny is getting these flashbacks. She's being triggered by something. And in this episode in particular, they were very heavy, very emotional flashbacks. Traumatic. So, you know, we'll see the aftermath of that, and then to also kind of be just dropped, have this other bomb dropped on her, you know, when she thinks that everything can be back to normal, they can relax and just focus on playing baseball, and now there's this other problem.
Yeah, and
of course,
it never stops for Jenny. It never stops. But yeah, we're only going to see that feeling of betrayal kind of grow.
Right.
Because Amelia is going to continue to step in it.
Yeah.
Just wade in the mire.
I mean, on the last episode, we're really going to have to look back and think, how much exactly has Amelia done for Jenny, you know, for her career?
That help no one versus else harm. Do.
Right. And yeah, I'm sure really... that having a, you know, a female agent maybe makes a difference, but I don't know.
I think if we were like, if we had scales and on one side there was help and on one side there was harm, I don't know. I'm thinking one side is going to be tipping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like we're already tipping way toward harm.
Yeah.
So, but again, that's me. I'm petty. You know, I don't like Amelia.
It's just funny that, you know, she's kind of presented as like this super professional, you know, she knows her stuff. No nonsense, but it feels like so many of her actions have been unprofessional.
Yeah. I mean, I think she would be perfect if Jenny Baker was an actress. She's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is the end of our episode. And next time we will talk about episode 6, which is called Wear It. And thank you for listening to us rant about the Celtics and and about this show.
Yeah, we would get into it, but it's like years and years of betrayal and angst and...
Yes.
The
episode triggered me as a Celtics fan. It did. Sorry. Yeah. I had to let some of it out.
People are just going to have to go back and listen to some old CZF episodes.
Basically.
I kind of want to do just to hear how angry we were. I mean, the anger hasn't gone anywhere. I'm still... That's just me. But
it's gotten worse, though. It's gotten deeper. Like, this last stuff is really wild. Like, do you realize Jay Crowder was telling his mother that he got traded 5 minutes before she passed?
Oh, my gosh.
Mr. Ainge is a heartless piece of shit. So... with that, you can find us online. Olivia is at Sportivica. I am at Dust Daughter. If you want to at me with comments about what I've said about Mr. Ainge, don't. You'll just I'm just gonna block you. I don't care.
If you don't know who he is, keep living your peaceful, blissful life.
Yes, exactly. Don't Google. But if you do want to read anything about this, please read Isaiah Thomas's piece on the Players Tribune. That'll pretty much tell you everything you need to know, except for the Jay Crowder bit. But yeah. And again, you can email us about the show, blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/blackgirlsquee. And until next time, bye.
Bye.